And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington football team for The Athletic, which means on Sunday, I was at FedEx Field to watch the Washington football team fall to the Kansas City Chiefs, 31-13, 13-10 lead at halftime, some hope, still a lot of trepidation, and that trepidation proved accurate as Patrick Mahomes woke up from sort of a sleepy first half, a mistake-prone first half by the Chiefs, and did what he did, what you'd expect. The Chiefs outscored Washington 21-0 in the second half to fall to 2-4. I'm going to have a couple quick thoughts on that in a moment. And also, had a fun conversation with a first-time guest talking about the game, all things Sean Taylor as part of today's ceremony. Controversial ceremony, an emotional ceremony, a lot to discuss there. And we talk about her role in the TV show Succession. Yes, one person's going to do all these things. That person is Sharla McBride from WUSA, sports anchor. Sharla was kind enough to talk to me while she was driving home. We were going to try to talk at the game. This time it just didn't work out, but I wanted to have her on. Succession starts tonight. And she was actually out on the field for some of the Sean Taylor for some of the Sean Taylor ceremony. So we're going to get into that and the game in just a few moments here on the Standing Room Only podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes or Spotify or listen to on the Athletic app. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, easy way to do it, go to theathletic.com/Standing, my last name. And you can get 50% off the subscription rate. I think it's the annual rate. That's still going on. I think it's only a couple more days. That way you can get the podcast ad-free. Something to consider. I hope you consider it. Also, I have a new article up on The Athletic after this game. Let's get to the game really quick before I bring Sharla into the conversation. I mean, broad strokes, you know, this is a continuation of where Washington is right now. Even if some things go well, and in the first half, look, I think the defensive effort was clearly a much better version. They went, and we talked about this last week, they went to what seemed like to be the obvious plan. Only rush four defensive linemen, because this is what teams are doing against Patrick Mahomes. Rush four defensive linemen, two deep safety to keep the plays in front of you, and then, you know, make the plays. And they did that for the most part in the first half, right? Only rushed four, but the pass rushers got there for the most part. Not necessarily tons of sacks, but they had three. But the group got pressure on Mahomes and kept them contained for the most part in the pocket. And then in the secondary, a group that has had all tons and tons of breakdowns, there were a bunch of plays where there really didn't look to be anybody open from my seat in the end zone. At this moment, I'm talking to you. I've watched about the first half. I've gone back and watched the first half of the replay, so I don't have a full scope there. And obviously, things got worse after halftime. And that's where things, yeah, did fall apart. Patrick Mahomes really just started to look like the MVP version of himself in the second half, particularly with the crazy throws from the crazy angles and all that. But, you know, Washington, you know, shot itself in the foot, I guess you could say. There was one sequence. Kansas City, first possession of the second half, punt. Washington's still leading at this point. Second possession. It's 3rd and 10. Patrick Mahomes throws a incompletion. But Montez Sweat lines up in the neutral zone. Okay, play over. You get the 5 yards. Next play, Chase Young, offsides. Now, it didn't matter because Mahomes completed the pass on the play, I believe, to Tyreek Hill for plenty for a first down. but it would have been an automatic first down for Chase Young. And Ron Rivera talked about how there were just too many missed opportunities in this game. And even though, like I said, they got the first down on the third down play anyway, these undisciplined things is kind of what Ron Rivera's talking about. And frankly, even when he talks about with maturity, when asked about his play after the game, Chase Young said that I'm hunting, things happen. That doesn't seem to be the answer you want to hear. Okay, even if you want to say some of that, at some point, though, you would add, hey, didn't work out, though. It was a mistake on my part. I got to do better, or whatever you want to say, because giving Mahomes any more opportunities than needed is problematic. And two plays after that, the completion of Tyreek Hill, Hill caught a touchdown pass in the end zone, and it was kind of off to the races from there. This was a reasonable defensive effort. They also gave up 499 yards of offense and 31 points. The offense, you know, again, Taylor Heinicke, you know, respect the gutsy play, but this is another game in which he has started to look like the guy that people questioned when he was out of the league, or at least questioned when you talk about whether he's a starter or not. Only 50 yards passing in the second half. His legs were not nearly the factor that you would think they would be, and that's something that I think they're going to have to discuss moving forward. Washington's also missing a bunch of pieces. One note there, Antonio Gibson, this shin injury that's been a problem, he went down for one point in the game. Looked like it was, maybe not serious, but looked like he was in some pain. Did come back, but it was a lot more J.D. McKissic in the second half, and Ron Rivera said that he thought Gibson was, quote, struggling, end quote, a bit with the injury. So we'll see what's going on there. Of course, already know Curtis Samuel, already know, at least for this week, already know Logan Thomas on IR. Sam Cosmi, Brandon Scherff for both out this week as well. And let's not forget, Ryan Fitzpatrick, not there. That's a lot of guys missing, plus Terry McLaurin had a hamstring injury late in the week. So there is a ton of missing pieces on offense, and that's already a challenge. That's a challenge for any team, but especially when you've got a guy like Taylor Heinicke out there. You know, don't give him the opportunity to play with a full group. And look, that's how it's going to go in the NFL. But right now, that is causing some issues for Washington, I think, to say the least. So they've got a lot to figure out here quickly. Green Bay on deck. I'll be in Green Bay for the Week 7 game against, you know, Aaron Rodgers, who's back to his MVP form for sure of late. And Washington's going to have to figure out some things quick. They're now 2-4. There's a Green Bay game. I think I saw they're a 10-point underdog already. And then it's at Denver and then Tampa Bay home after a bye week. Those three teams, the next on the schedule, I believe, are combined 13-5, even with Denver at 3-3. So getting wins out of there is going to be tough for Washington. And they're already, like I said, 2-4. You lose two out of three or all three, and things start to look pretty ugly. So they've got to figure out some things quick if we want to even talk about playoffs or contending. But I would basically say at this point, Washington has kind of showed who they are. I'm not saying they're the worst team in the league by any stretch, but they barely beat two teams that are towards the bottom of the league, and they didn't have much of a chance against four of the better teams. Of their four losses, all probably to playoff teams, right, or playoff contenders, and maybe a little bit more in the case of Buffalo and Kansas City. And yet, they lost the last three of those games by double digits, and I think we all think, or at least I certainly do, that the opener against the Chargers was much, the gap was a lot wider between the two teams than the four-point result indicated. Anyway, all that said, Washington is at Green Bay on Sunday. More to come here on the podcast this week about this game, where this team is, and so on. And also, of course, on The Athletic, I'll have takeaways this week, and then some more interesting things, hopefully, for you guys as well. But that said, I want to get Sharla in here. We're going to talk about this game, the emotional day component with regards to the Sean Taylor ceremony. We talked about the controversy, about what happened here. How did the PR, how did the organization seemingly botch this execution in terms of getting this ceremony announced publicly in a timely manner for a guy who is such a beloved figure for fans. And what else happened with that? Plus, again, as I mentioned, Sharla is in the TV show Succession. So we had a fun chat about that as well. Let's get to all that here on the Standard Room Only podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, as promised, joining me here on the podcast, a first-time guest. She was at today's Washington-Kansas City game with me. She was on the field, at least for part of the Sean Taylor number retirement day ceremony. And she also, very importantly, is in the television show Succession. She's in apparently in the credits. There's a lot going on here we have to discuss, so I'm super glad that we're able to do this while she's in her car driving. Sharla McBride, first off, I appreciate you doing this. We'll get to Succession, but, like, how are you? It's just a couple hours after you left the stadium. How are things in your world now that you've endured a lot here today?
Things are going good. Things are great. Today was a good day. I mean, you were there, too. It was a good day in the sense, like, first off, it was great weather, right? I always look at that because if it's pouring down rain and if it's just, like, miserable out, we're all going to get in kind of a mood. But it was, the sun was shining, fans were filling into the stadium, Sean Taylor jerseys everywhere, Sean Taylor towels everywhere. It was really special. Like, you could feel that when you walked into the stadium today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, when you get off the field, so because of the COVID situation previously, pre-COVID, all of us, you know, both print and TV were allowed down on the field. When you're down on the field, you're there for a lot of the pregame activities, and we would have been there for some of the Sean Taylor events and so on. But, like, under the current rules, the cool TV people get to be down there, the, you know, sort of second tier...
Yeah.
The second tier print media, not so much. They got to keep us separate. So I wasn't down there for that. And then when you're in the press box, the windows are like this really thick glass. It's really hard to hear. Like, even during the game,
Yeah. Even
if there was a sellout crowd, it's really hard to hear. So I was kind of, from an atmosphere perspective, it's really hard to gauge kind of what's going on there. So we'll get to the game part of that. But from that perspective, like, what was it like inside the stadium, and particularly for, you know, as things were happening both pregame and with the Sean Taylor situation and all that?
Well, you know, a lot of fans came in early, you know, to kind of get down as close to the field as they could. A lot of fans with Sean Taylor jerseys, you know, kind of breaking out those special jerseys today. Speaking with one fan that got there a few hours early and was right there in the front row, him and his son drove from Tampa, Florida, just to see this game. They are also big Taylor Heineke fans. They had Taylor Heineke jerseys as well, which Taylor came over and signed for them. But you had a lot of people that, you know, were really excited to be part of this. And it was really nice to see the atmosphere before the game. You also had Sean Taylor's family was there. His teenage daughter, Jackie, who was 18 months old when he was murdered, and her mother, and Sean Taylor's father and Sean Taylor's brother, which they all look alike too. You know, right when they walk out, you can tell, wow, this is Sean Taylor's family. And I think at the beginning, I saw Jackie, his daughter, kind of soaking it all in. And honestly, the coolest moment I saw today, Landon Collins, who has been very outspoken about his fandom for Sean Taylor. You know, he said that he picked 21 initially when he started playing because of Sean Taylor. And he made a point of coming right over to Jackie on the sidelines and talking to her. And I could hear him telling her how much he loved her father. And she absolutely was soaking in that conversation, you know, because she was so little. And you know, she relishes, I could tell, listening to those stories. And then Landon insisted they get a picture together. And it was just really cool to see, you know, someone treat Jackie like that and with such respect. But then things got very emotional, you know. I think she was taking it all in, and I could see her standing there on the sidelines and looking up at all the crowds and seeing all the people with the towels and her father's jersey on, and she seemed, you know, okay, kind of soaking it all in. Well, the second they played this video tribute board, about 15 minutes before kickoff, and she was standing there watching it with her mother, and she broke down. And, you know, I think that's so hard to watch this young teenage girl. It's emotional. You know, you're seeing someone in an organization pay such tribute to your father, but you didn't get a chance to know him. And it was really tough for her. She really started to break down, and so did her mother, understandably. But in all, you can tell they are so grateful for what happened today, and they are so grateful that, you know, her father was remembered in this way.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be wild. Like, you know, obviously, we can get into maybe how this whole thing came about and all that. And obviously everybody only found out about this just a few days ago, but, you know, and because of the way the announcement came down, it was very chaotic and we're all quite not sure what happened. For me, the focus has been a lot on, wait, what happened here? As opposed to, unfortunately, focusing on, wow, how great this is for the family and for the child that she, I mean, obviously never got to know her dad, and to hear how old she is now, it's like, wow, she was just a baby when he was killed.
Right.
For her, like, obviously, I'm sure she's heard all the stories, she's seen the videos, I'm sure she's probably talked to some people, maybe she's even been to an event or two in his remembrance, but to be at this, you know, 50,000 people, all the Taylor jerseys, everybody there for this. I mean, you know, his number is on the sideline. All that there was a dedication ceremony pregame because they named one of the streets outside the stadium after him. That's got to be just overwhelming to deal with that.
Yeah, I think that's it. All of this stuff. They had an alumni event last night. Then, as you said, then she goes to the stadium and she sees his, like, jersey number on the grass, and then, you know, she's seeing all these fans and seeing everything that is, you know, Sean Taylor all around her, and then you see the video and you hear the music, and, you know, I think that's when it all kind of hit her. And like you said, it's overwhelming. I mean, she's a young teenage girl, and it's definitely overwhelming, you know. And it was pretty heartbreaking to see her break down, because you could just see the raw emotion from this family that, you know, while this happened back in 2007, this is still very real and something they deal with every single day. And you mentioned the hoopla kind of surrounding this and, you know, the negative aspects of it earlier this week and the fans being upset and all of that. But we forget, you know, this is about one man who meant a lot to this fan base, but meant even more to his family. And I know that his family was extremely grateful today.
For sure. I take it you did not have a chance to talk to them, though, directly, either. Maybe you did as a side thing, as a person-to-person, but not on camera, because it seemed like they were pretty limiting with allowing this Taylor family to talk. But you were on the field, I wasn't, so I just want to check.
Right. They actually had a spokesperson with them, and they just put out a statement, and the person that was with them today with Washington came over to those of us TV people, as you say, and just said that they declined to speak today. They were just kind of going to keep to themselves today. I think they were also fearful of getting too emotional. It's a lot to talk about that. So they did not want to speak while they were down there on the field. But like I said, it was so nice to see them have conversations with other people, you know, just like the Landon Collins conversation, you know, that I think that stuff is really, really special for them.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I'm happy for the Taylor family. I hope it was a great day for them, their friends, their family, as alumni weekend. Again, we weren't exactly, most of us were not allowed to be around the alumni, so I'm not exactly sure who was there. I think I saw J.P. Finley put out a picture with Sonny Jurgensen. I'm sure there was lots of other people.
Yes, I saw him there, Yes.
Yeah.
87 years young, right? 87 years young. And, yeah, he took a seat right on the bench next to Tressway. And, of course, had his cigar in his mouth, as he often does. And he was just living the life. He was soaking it all in. So, yeah, no one was going to tell him, don't have a cigar. No one was going to tell him, get off the bench. Like, he can do whatever he wants. So, yeah, I did see him down there, which was fun.
Yeah, no, he's a legend. It was good to see him because I know he had not been in great health. I mean, again, I only saw the picture, but it was good to see him. I'm glad to see he still looks good, and you know that he was able to make it out there for this day. I want to get to the game in a sec, but I feel at some point in this podcast I need to discuss this. So since we're talking about it, and you feel free to answer this however you want, but obviously a big controversy over these last few days has been, wait, at a minimum, how are you only giving fans 3 days' notice to come and honor Sean Taylor? I think the announcement for the attendance was around 51,000. Let's just even say that's an accurate number. I mean, it looked to me like the club level and the upper deck were fairly empty, or you know, certainly right. Certainly not deep. That there's still a lot of people that could have been there. There was only 10,000 rally towels. That also suggests either again a complete miscalculation of a feel for this moment, or you know. Was this thing done late? And for me, the fact that we were not allowed to talk to the Taylor family suggests keeping them apart. That's very odd. This is a moment you should want to celebrate them. By the way, like I would imagine if they had told us even a week in advance, and maybe you were able to do something at the last second, I don't know, but like, you know, I would imagine you and Darren are able to put together a video package of Sean Taylor's history and career. You probably already have something on file, right? I would guess, because we've gone through this, and people like me would have been able to write stuff. So the more this has gone on, the more I believe that there is something kind of weird here, that this probably was more thrown together at the last second and all that. Again, you feel free to weigh in as you want or not, but to me, today only unfortunately made it all feel even weirder because of the fact that the family is right there and they're not allowing. I should mention, I was told there were two interviews granted. One with the team and one with a team partner. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, it was odd. And, I mean, they're right there on the sideline. And, you know, obviously, knowing us, you know, we would, if granted an interview, we would only show the utmost respect. And we would tread lightly. And, you know, because we're not here to make anyone feel uncomfortable or anything. And, you know, we just want to talk about Sean Taylor. And, yeah, the interview should have been granted. It was odd that they were very, you know, insistent on no. And now, again, that might have been, first of all, Jackie's a young teenage girl, and, you know, maybe her mom was very emotional. And so maybe they just knew going into it they would be too emotional. So they had maybe asked the Washington football team, like, please keep us away from media. And that's fine. That's their choice completely. As far as the announcement, you know, obviously, you know, it happened on Thursday, right? So that's three days out, you know? And yeah, that upset a lot. Came in the middle of this week where we're also hearing about the fallout from the John Gruden to former GM Bruce Allen. And, you know, a lot of people saying, of course, that we've seen on social media, was this just a distraction? The statement that we've seen, and I want to believe the football team's statement, and that they did have something planned. I do not understand, though, because whenever they have had something planned, whatever it may be, we usually hear about it months in advance. And so, yes, this is very odd that even if they did have a plan, why sit on it? Why not let people know back in August, hey, alumni weekend in October, this is when we're retiring Sean Taylor's jersey. Let people go out and buy a jersey and then buy a ticket and come to the game. You know, like, Let people do that. Let people set up big tailgates for it. Let people, you know, kind of celebrate his legacy and look forward to this event. Instead, you're giving them 3 days' notice. You know, what if there's a Washington football team fan who lives in the middle of Idaho but is a diehard fan and would love to get here? But you know what? They can't get a plane ticket last minute because it's $500. Like, I think about those people. I think about the fans that really wanted to take part in this. And 3 days' notice for such a big, big moment yes, it was wrong. And, I mean, as we know, you and I were at practice all week, and, you know, Ron Rivera apologized on behalf of the team. You know, it wasn't his apology to give at all. He did not have to do that. But, you know, he addressed it, and he admitted, hey, we screwed up, we as an organization. Jason Wright admitted that, too. I think they quickly realized within 12 hours of, you know, sending out this, hey, guess what, Sean Taylor retirement jersey day. They quickly realized, oh, my gosh, people aren't excited. They're upset. The timing, not ideal. So hopefully, as, I don't know, as my mother would say, hopefully they learned something from this. I don't know. Well, and next time around, it's a little better.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they definitely, I get the impression that, I don't know, they have a lot of new faces in there, and they didn't realize, they didn't, I think they recognize they didn't view this differently than some of the other. You know, every week there's some event, and I'm not discounting any of these charitable events, which they primarily are, or whatever they may be. But from an emotional context, these things are way different, and I don't think they understood that at all. Again, that's the charitable view. If they really did tack on the retirement number ceremony, they were already doing something, it seems like. But if they tacked on the retirement jersey because of everything that's going on, you mentioned the Gruden emails and everything else, I mean, that's obviously shameful. I don't know that to be true, so therefore I'm not going to say that definitively happened. But again, keeping the family away from us. And you're right. I would be absolutely respectful. You know, I'm sure they'd be incredibly emotional for them. They have nothing to do with any of this. And I doubt any of us would have definitively gone in and said, hey, by the way, could you tell us, you know, what happened here? But regardless, they kept us away. We'll never know what any of us would have said. Anyway, I'm happy for the Taylors that went down. I'm happy for the fans that got the opportunity to experience it. Unfortunately for those fans, they probably were there rooting for the Washington football team, and the second half of that game went decidedly against them. Like, in the first half, it was like, okay, Patrick Mahomes is way off. He threw two picks.
Right.
One of them was a Harry High School jump ball pass to nowhere. That was insane. Yeah, really bad, and they look listless. And Washington had a 13-10 halftime lead. I thought their defense did play better. The coverage, there weren't a lot of guys open relative to what we're used to seeing so far from this team. At the same time, you know, you can't settle for field goals against that team. They settled for two in the first half. Hopkins at least made them. He missed one in the second half. And then once the second half got going, after a first flawed possession, Kansas City started to roll. And to me, ultimately, it just reminded me that, you know what, we can keep kind of wondering where Washington ranks, but there is the only two teams they've beaten are teams at the bottom of the league, and the four teams they've lost to are playoff contenders, which is where people thought Washington was. And so at the end of the day, six games into the season, I think it's pretty clear, make any excuse anybody wants, there's a big gap between them and people who are good, and I'm not saying they can't get better, but that's where it is right now, and it needs to be acknowledged, and as opposed to people just saying, you know, they're figuring it out. There's a gap between them and the actual good teams.
We're kind of sick of hearing the "we're figuring it out" soundbite. Like, you're 6 weeks in, as you said. You know, we understand. You know, week two, week three. You know, they're trying to figure out the details, as they've often said. They're trying to find consistency. You know, each man needs to do his job. Like, now, as you said, we're 6 weeks in. You know, what's going on? Miscommunication still a factor. And like you said, they're not up to par with these teams that, I mean, yes, they won the division last year, but we're looking at this team right now going, oh my goodness, how do you play one way, one half, and completely different the next half? And also in the first half, yes, they were able to produce scoring drives, but as you said, they're field goals. And against the Chiefs, you can't be kicking field goals or missing field goals for that matter, but you need touchdowns. When you're there, right there in the red zone, you need touchdowns. And those weren't happening, except for the one, Taylor Heinicke to Ricky Seals-Jones. That was great. That was a great play. That was a great touchdown. Great to see Ricky Seals-Jones coming in and doing something. But, yeah, it's just, yeah. I also wonder now, my first thought watching the first half, I'm sure you were thinking the same thing. Like, wow, okay, defense is finally clicking. Defense is stepping it up. They're making it difficult for Patrick Mahomes. Or was it that Pat Mahomes was just off and then found his real self in the second half?
Yeah, and I think we got the answer to that one pretty definitively there. You know, I like, even if you wanted to say as a net scenario, like, okay, look, the Chiefs have obviously one of the best offenses in modern NFL right. history. And yes, they've been a little bit off this year. They're still scoring over 30 points a game. So it's not like they've been, you know, their real issue is on defense more than it is offense. But okay, the offense hasn't been as extraordinary as it's been. And even if you want to say that Washington...
But if you look at it... No, I was going to say, if you look at, you're talking about their offense. I mean, yeah, they're going into this game, they're averaging 30 points a game and 420 yards of offense, right? This game, I think they got just shy of 500 yards total offense, 499. And what they get, 31 points. So, yeah, that's still a high-powered offense. Patrick Mahomes had a little bit of an off day for a half. But look at what they're able to do. Meanwhile, look at Washington's offense for that entire second half. Nothing.
Yeah, I think Taylor Heinicke threw for 50 yards in the second half in that game. But to your point, and this is where I was exactly going. You know, so much of why people thought that Washington's defense was ready to be a top 10, you know, was definitively a top 10 defense, and maybe even more than that, was the fact that a lot of the statistics last year backed them up. And, you know, there's this debate that they gave Tampa Bay its best game in the playoffs last year. And that last part, whatever. Tampa Bay also scored 31 points, and Tampa Bay had a little over 500 yards. And my take was, if you're supposed to be this great defense, you can't give up 500 yards to anybody, right? Now, obviously this year they're not playing anywhere close to the level they were even a year ago. But you gave up 499 yards. Again, I get it. Mahomes is great. They also turned the ball over three times, Kansas City did. You know, they were not clicking. They're without their starting running back. And Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce were both on the injury report list past week. Obviously, they both looked fine. So, you know, not too much there. But, like, yeah, the defense, while showing signs of improvement, gave up 500 yards of offense,
right?
And had no answer. I mean, Kansas City basically on the last drive they took it over with just under 11 minutes to go, and they went all the way. They went 90 something yards down the field and chewed up another 8 minutes. So there was
96 yards down the field. You're right; they chewed up the entire fourth quarter almost.
Yeah. Now to flip it to the offense, I believe you are a Georgia person. Like, so Georgia is like
I am a proud Georgia alumni, yes.
Yeah, so you've got Georgia blood coursing through you. So I don't know where you are on the Taylor Heinicke experience. I mean, I know you're an objective reporter, but, you know, I can imagine you might be having a little rooting interest for the guy from that part of the world. This is a second game in a row and third game this year where he has not looked like a guy who's a starting quarterback. Now, the games against Buffalo and New Orleans, those were against defenses that ranked very high in the league. Kansas City is one of the few defenses ranked below Washington. And yet, Heinicke, you know, threw for less than 200 yards, only got 50 in the second half. He really was hemmed in by Kansas City's defense. So he couldn't, he really was not a factor with his legs. Washington didn't score a point in the second half.
Right.
I can't even blame Heinicke that much in the sense that no Curtis Samuel, no Brandon Scherff, no Sam Cosmi, no Logan Thomas. And then Antonio Gibson, the shin injury, pops up again. He gets hurt in the game.
Yeah.
And really,
and we don't know about McLaurin. Like, was McLaurin 100% healthy out there? We know he was dealing with, what was it, a hamstring injury this week? So, I don't know. And yeah, you're right. Like, you have so many injuries on that offense. Now, again, everyone has injuries. You know, not making excuses. But they seem to be having a lot right now. And so, yeah, you don't know. You don't know with you said, am I like a Taylor Heinicke fan? I'm rooting for Taylor to succeed. I want him to succeed. I want him to do well. I love his overall attitude and his demeanor and his take on the game. And I, you know, talking to other players this week, I was talking with Cole Holcomb after practice, and I asked him, what is it about Taylor that you love most? And he said, because he's one of the guys. He doesn't act like this hotshot league QB. It's almost like untouchable. Like, he comes into practice and leaves. That's not Taylor. He's like, I could play video games with him and hang out on the couch. And he's like, and that makes us all friends. And he's like, and we want to play for a guy like that because, and Cole Holcomb echoed what we've all known. You know, no one gave Taylor a chance. You know, he was the guy that, you know, kind of scrapped his way into the NFL. And then here he is. And, you know, he's got that grit, as we've heard many guys say. And they love that about him. They love that he really, really tries to make plays and do whatever he can to win. It's just when you're looking at, like, today, the plays just aren't happening. It's just not happening. And as he said after the game himself, we're just not executing. We have a game plan, but clearly the second half, nothing happened out of that game plan.
Yeah, and like I said, I look at Taylor Heinicke has exceeded all expectations that anybody would have realistically had
right.
when he showed up back on the scene last year. And even for this year, you know, he's been – their two wins do not happen if he doesn't make big plays
right.
down the stretch. And, you know, he did fine in relief against the Chargers, against the Saints. But, like, you know, it is they also settled for field goals against the Saints, but it is what it is. Anyway, it's not a knock on Taylor Heinicke per se, but the limitations are showing. And interestingly enough,
right.
post-game, I noticed on Twitter, both Kyle Allen and Ryan Fitzpatrick were trending. So whatever people were discussing, there was also a little bit going on here about the quarterback situation. And we'll
yeah.
see. Well, it'll be interesting to see, does anything change? We don't know when Ryan Fitzpatrick is back. Ron Rivera told us the other day there's an MRI coming. But, you know, I think the projection time was sometime around the bye week. So you still have two more games at Green Bay, at Denver, bye week, then Tampa. So we'll see if Fitzpatrick is back in the next few weeks and if they just keep staying with Heinicke or not. We can go to the final segment unless you have any other game takes that you need to reveal to the people.
Oh, game takes. You know what I want to say? Because a lot of people don't get to see the post-game interviews like we do. I know they're streamed sometimes and people can, you know, find them on, I think, Washington's YouTube. But totally off topic, but I just got to say this. How much do you love listening to Terry McLaurin after a game, win or loss? I mean, Terry McLaurin for president. This guy can give you a soundbite if you need a soundbite. You could ask him anything. Today it was game. What do you think? He comes up with Charles Dickens, Tale of Two Halves. It's fantastic. The guy is poetic. He's great to listen to. I can honestly say if it was the worst game on the planet, I'm still going to look forward to hearing what Terry McLaurin has to say after any game, right? I mean, he's just, even in practice, like, this guy is just fantastic to talk to, and he always treats us with the utmost kindness. Yeah, that's it. That's my, like, little McLaurin shout-out. Thanks for making our day.
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, every year there's a the local media gives out a good guy award, basically somebody who's cooperative with the media, whatever. And
right.
I believe Terry McLaurin was the runaway winner last year. Now, last year was weird because it was all Zoom, but it's largely to your point. There's other guys who definitely come out and they talk, and it's all fine. Look, everybody can only do what they do. But he's giving us detailed, thoughtful answers on
right.
all kinds of different topics, both about his own game, the team, broad topics outside of that, all that. And yeah, he's very interesting. He's very mature for his age. He's way more mature at his age than I am now, let alone, you know,
right.
anything else. So
I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. We're very glad that that Terry is there for us, just like I'm sure his quarterback is very happy he's there for him on the field. But yeah, today was
right.
not on the field was not a Terry McLaurin like performance, but post game press conference, he delivered. I'm gonna ask you about succession, but I forgot. Typically, when I have guests on for the first time, I ask a couple get to know you questions. I'm definitely springing this on you, but nothing you can't handle. Are you ready? Are you ready for this?
Oh yeah, I'm ready.
All right, let's go here. All right, Twitter is a very important thing to all of us. Who is somebody
yeah.
on Twitter that does not follow you that you wish did?
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Okay.
While Charlotte ponders that.
I'm trying to think.
You
yeah,
think,
okay.
I'll tell everybody,
Charlotte
is at Charlotte McBride on Twitter. So if you don't currently follow her, maybe you're that person.
Yeah,
she doesn't
right.
want to call you out. Now go follow her on Twitter, and then we won't have this problem anymore. But I'm going to guess it might
God.
Be somebody in
you
a more
what?
Famous realm.
I don't
realm.
Know. I'm literally it's like, oh my gosh, I'm having a brain fart. I'm trying to think of, like, oh, why didn't this person follow me? I don't know. Like, go to the next one. I'm gonna think.
All right, you keep pondering that one.
I'm thinking.
Who is your all-time favorite athlete?
Oh favorite in any sport, right?
Whatever you got.
Okay, let's see. This is tough. You know what? I'm going to say Emmitt Smith. I grew up in Texas and grew up with a family full of Cowboys fans. Sorry. We just looked up to Emmitt Smith, like, as kids. And in the 90s, watching Dallas do their thing. And I kind of have a fun story really quick about Emmitt Smith. So, you know, always just my little brother just had posters on the wall of him, you know, Emmitt Smith. So then fast forward to me in my career, my first job is in Abilene, Texas, and on Sundays would drive into Dallas and cover the Cowboys game. So here I am. It's the last game of the season, and as you know, we're up in the press box, usually at the top of the stadium, and you have to take an elevator and go down to get interviews on the field or in the locker room after the game. So they tell all the media, okay, get out of your seats. You know, it's 4 minutes left in the game. Calm down. And I'm like, okay. So everyone kind of goes to the elevators, and they get all full, and I just like, oh, I'll take the next one. Like, I'm not in that big of a hurry. I'll take the next one. So I was the only one, and I was like, oh, it's fine. So I get in the elevator, and then the lady says that we have to take a stop at the next level. I'm like, that's fine. And in comes Emmitt Smith. And I was 23 years old, and it was my first reporting job. And just even sharing like this, because I don't get it. I mean, you and I, when we've done this for a long time, we're not really fans anymore, you know? So it's at that moment, though, that was kind of the only time I remember in my life or in my adult career kind of getting a little bit of like a fangirl, you know, like, okay, this guy who like my dad loves, my brother loves, like, this is great, you know? So yeah, that's, I think, definitely the one that just more of, because my family just like loved him.
I appreciate that. I totally get it. You're from Texas. Now I want to know if somebody had just followed you because I said that, now unfollowed you because they're a Washington fan and you.
Don't worry. Cowboys fandom went away. Like, it's okay. I've been on the East Coast for a very long time. My last job, I covered the Eagles and Giants. So I pretty much just worked my way through the NFC East.
Amazing. All right, good story, especially the random elevator meeting. That's wildly impressive.
Super nice, too. Super nice. So there we go.
All right. Based on a hobby or a habit, what's a Hall of Fame that you would qualify for?
Oh, God. A hobby or a habit. Okay. Oh, man.
Okay.
I know what it is. I can binge watch a Netflix show faster than anyone on the planet. Like, I will not sleep until I finish it. So that's it. Don't even take bathroom breaks. Like, just go.
Wow. That is both impressive and scary at the same time. Did you watch Squid Game?
Okay, so this is and I have to be into it. I watched 2 episodes, and I'm not feeling it. I'm not totally into it. And you know what? I'm also like watching it with the English like speaking, and I've been told that I need to turn off the sound and like just watch it with the subtitles.
So I watched the first 2 episodes with the English because that's just the way it was presented to me, and I just didn't think to change it. Then somebody told me the same thing, and I definitely think it's better. I mean, the subtitles, you know, it's not even that big of a deal, but it's definitely better. You get more of the emotional sense. I'm not going into the Hall of Fame for my binge watching, but I watched most of the episodes in very quick order. So I would say keep going. I mean, look, it's a bit of a tough watch. I won't spoil anything for anybody. There's a lot going on here, but nonetheless, it was entertaining and gripping.
I mean, everyone's talking about it. Right. So I feel like I need to just give it another shot because I can't be that one person, you know. So I feel like, all right.
Yeah. All right. I'll skip the question of asking you what Olivia Garvey is like in real life, but instead,
I'll tell you because she's one of my best friends.
I know. Well, you know. I didn't want to betray confidences, and, you know, I'm sure people are curious. Anybody who follows either one of you on social media sees you guys hang out, but, like, no, it's okay. You guys, you know, it's all right. We'll keep some mystery here. Maybe we'll get you both on at some point. I haven't had her on yet, so we'll have to do that. Hopefully, she doesn't get mad at me for going to you first. But beyond the fact that we were both at the game and I wanted to have you on. By the way, I didn't even mention that Charlotte and I bonded after the Atlanta game because we were both on the same Southwest flight. I had one of the early numbers and got a good seat on the aisle. Charlotte was one of the stragglers that got stuck in the middle seat, but there was a middle seat next to me. She took pity on me, sat next to me, so some, you know, gross person wasn't there. And then we, like, talked about the game and life for, like, 2 hours. It was very enjoyable, and I very much appreciate it.
It was fantastic. I mean, hey, if I have to have a middle seat, that's the one I was taking. You had the good seat. You were, like, row 3 on the Southwest.
I didn't play. I don't play around on some of these things. And it also turns out, because people here know I'm a big into Survivor, that you went to college with Survivor legend Parvati Shallow. This is a whole other, so we have a lot. We didn't even get into this. Next time we'll get into that. But last thing, I mentioned Succession at the top. You are literally in the show. I forgot. I mean, I knew that you were in the show, and before, so the we're talking Sunday night. The season premiere just happened. Neither one of us have had a chance to watch it. It just happened.
Right.
And I went to rewatch the last two episodes of season two because it's been a minute since I watched the show and whatever. Uh-huh. And I'm watching it, and there's congressional hearings happening and things like that involving the family. They're in some trouble. And they cut to a newscast, and they're showing somebody, and literally, you're on my TV as the anchor. Excuse me, could you tell everybody what your name is, please?
Oh, yes. I am Delta Pike.
That is
me.
That is an amazing name.
That's the name I was given. Yeah. So I play, so I mean, for anyone who's watched Succession, it is about a family who owns a media company. When it first came out, season one, season two, the media company and news channel that they were trying to mimic a little bit was Fox News. And so this big, powerful, rich family kind of runs this Fox News, essentially, organization. But, you know, the show goes into the family itself and all of that. Well, I am one of their Fox Newsy anchors, but it's called ATN. I don't know what ATN stands for. And you know, when I was on set last, I asked one of the directors and they didn't even know what ATN stood for. It's just like ATN. I don't know. So that's the news channel that they own. But yeah, so kind of crazy.
That's wild. So you just told me, in season three, I absolutely don't want any spoilers, but that's amazing that you're in season three. I guess, could you explain to me, because, you know, I've told you, you're very good on television, but there's lots of people who are TV reporters who could do this hypothetically, I assume. How did you get in the show?
So it's kind of like a crazy, it's a crazy story. So really, I had done a few other shows. So I've also been in Designated Survivor. I've actually been in 10 episodes of that. And the show Quantico, which is also on ABC, and the show Mr. Robot, which was on USA Network. So that's kind of fun. And I guess had that on my resume. And then HBO was kind of looking for someone for their new show, Succession. And I literally just sent in like a quick, I did it on my cell phone when they asked, and it was kind of an audition, I guess, but it was really just a quick, like, thing, and they knew that I had done these other shows, and so it was within 24 hours, actually, I got a call, and they said, tomorrow, can you be in New York City? We're shooting for, this is season two, and I went to their set, and I did have a freak out. I didn't know what to expect. I was kind of like, all right, what's going on, you know? And when I arrived on set and had my own trailer with my name on it, that's when I kind of had a freak out moment. I'm not going to lie. I don't freak out about a lot of things, but I was extremely excited. So I got to do a few episodes, and then they called me back for season three, which, as we know, like, started tonight. So, you know, I think what it was, and they told me this on set, I mean, everyone there is a professional actor. I am clearly not. But they, for these parts, I think had tried out a few actors, but they felt like they just weren't delivering the lines. And I guess someone that just talks like this all the time, or does this all the time, that's kind of what they were looking for. And so, yeah. And I met one of my like best friends doing this too. She was also, so I'm the blonde, right? Cause you have to have the blonde anchor, and she was hired as the brunette anchor. So we actually met that morning, and then they brought us both back for season three. So that's been super fun over the last few years that we both, and she is an anchor at MLB Network. So like she also was a, you know, professional newswoman, if you will. And so they kind of brought us on to just kind of do our thing. And yeah, it was fun. And just to be on set, and it really is Hollywood-like. It's crazy. We have, you know, makeup people and hair people and lighting people and costume people. And it was just, it was such a fun experience. So I don't know if there's a season four, Succession people, you know, Delta Pike's ready.
Well, all I can hope is that with your trailer and your new fancy life, that you did full method acting and had everybody call you Delta Pike the whole time. And you were just in character the whole time, like you're Daniel Day-Lewis or something. That's what I'm, in my head, that's what I'm picturing at least.
Oh my gosh. No. Oh, it's been fun though. I definitely, people I work with joke and call me Delta, and because it's such an interesting name. I don't know.
Amazing.
Definitely unique for sure.
All right. Well, everybody go. But I assume a lot of people are watching Succession. If you haven't gotten into it, I mean, go back and watch the beginning. You'll see Charlo throughout the first two seasons. Catch up here. She's also in the credits, apparently, we think. So very cool.
Yeah, the opening credits I hear. So I have not seen them. So yeah, I have not seen that yet, but apparently I'm in the opening credits, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna, we'll see. Cause you know how Hollywood is. I mean, you know, we could shoot a scene for a whole day and then they could chop it all up. So you never know.
Right. Well, I hope you rub it in Darren Haynes' face that you are in Succession and he is not. I'm also rooting for that. I mean, when you have these moments, you got to hold it over people. This is how.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, awesome debut. Oh wait, we got to go back. Twitter person who doesn't follow you that you wish did. My answer,
you know,
is
what?
Scott Van Pelt, for the record.
Oh, that's a really good one. I'm gonna say Ron Rivera. I don't think he follows me. Come on,
oh,
Ron.
Wow.
Riverboat Ron.
I mean.
I know. I'll just keep it simple.
Yeah, this one's workable. All right, in the press conference, I may literally just say, "Hey, Ron, I know you don't want me to ask about your defense. So instead, could you explain to me why you don't follow Sharla on Twitter?"
Oh my God, I will die! No. Oh Lordy.
All right, we'll think about that. Maybe I'll come up with a different question. Sharla, I definitely appreciate the time. I know you're driving back, so that made it from a timing perspective work, but nonetheless I really appreciate the fact that you had a few minutes. Again, go of course watch every she's does on WUSA9 at Sharla McBride on Twitter. If you're a Twitter person, be nice, and again and I'll see you out at the park this week, and we'll get you back here on the podcast.
Sounds like a plan. It's been great. Thanks so much.
Maybe after Succession's over we'll do a recap.
Oh, yes. See what Delta's all about.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thanks so much. All right. Many thanks to Sharla McBride for her time. Many thanks to everybody here for checking out the podcast. We'll have a lot more coming up this week for sure. Again, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers up on deck next. It is the definition of it does not get any easier for Washington. For sure. Look, they only scored 13 points against a Chiefs team that had given up more than that in every game dating back to last season. So it's not just about the defense right now. The offense has got limited pieces. We'll see who's available to go next week. Maybe you get Brandon Scherff and Sam Cosmi back, and that can help a little bit. Hopefully Antonio Gibson's okay. We will see. But, and Curtis Samuel, you know, I'm not going to guess that one anymore. All right, that's it for now. Ben Standing signing off. Until next time, see ya.
Football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.